just hope for the best, Jeremy. I'll play with you.
Radio.
Warning. You are about to leave your comfort zone. Beyond the teachers. Beyond the gurus. Beyond duality. Ever beyond.
Good evening and welcome to Ever Beyond. In fact, good evening, good morning, and wherever you are on this planet, it's going to be a lovely day. So my guest tonight is a dear friend of mine. She's called Rita Fraze, and tonight we're going to be talking about relationships, and specifically in terms of sacred relationships. Rita, I was thinking that we could talk for a little while and then open up the phone lines. Are you open for questions later on?
I certainly am.
That's fantastic.
For sure.
So, first of all, before I introduce you, there you go. Rita Fraze, good evening.
Good evening. On this deep winter night.
Indeed.
The icicles, lots of, snowflakes of absolute beautiful geometry.
So,
is it snowing, actually? Is it snowing where you are, Jeremy?
No, it's finished snowing. It's now starting to melt, and I was walking on what was effectively a three-quarter mile slush puppy this evening, walking home. It was pretty horrendous to do so. It was an adventure. It definitely is quite an adventure. Some people were, my housemate has also fallen over on the ice and broken his thigh bone, and he's, you know, I've had to visit him in the hospital looking after him. So it's been quite a week of events and stuff going on, and presumably there's no lack of stuff going on over down. I have to tell our listeners that you live in Glastonbury.
I do.
The heart chakra of the planet.
It's true. I've got some interesting news to give you a bit later, because Jeremy and I could just completely go off the tangent and never get to talk about sacred relationships. But remind me to tell you something that happened in Glastonbury today.
Fantastic.
I haven't even told my sweet lover who's cutting chocolate cheesecake in the kitchen here.
Are you still making cake?
I have to tell you both, actually, because it's news. It's terrible news, actually. Or maybe it's not terrible, but the holy thorn tree in Glastonbury was decimated today. It was cut down by some crazy person.
No.
Yeah.
Wow. Now, that is an event.
We'll come back to the esoteric significance of
Indeed
it.
Indeed we will. Indeed we will. But that is quite an event.
Amazing.
That's a major thing. So, let us speak. Oh, good evening. And
good evening.
It's very good to have you here. And so, where would you like to start?
Tell me the theme of the show, and then I'm going to tell you where I'd like to start.
Okay. The theme of this show, as the name of this show in general, is called Ever Beyond. And that comes from, it was the name of the band I used to be in, and I just thought, what a fantastic name. And the band was very short-lived, so I thought, I'll keep the name going with the radio show. And it's got the theme of Ever Beyond, which is, let's take where we're at now and take it to the next level, the level that may manifest in next year, 5 years, next week, but to look at, not where we are or where we've been, but where we're going.
Okay.
And so presumably, relationships are going to be changing in the future, aren't they?
Yes, they are. And I'm really honoured to be invited to talk about Ever Beyond relationships and give a glimpse into and an inspiration into what I understand about sacred relationships. So let me start off by saying that to imagine that most people, as far as I can see, are very scared or apprehensive to come to a place of intimacy. Mm-hmm. Okay, so when I say intimacy, what I mean about that is a place of very, very deep meeting or into me I see. So, and yet, as far as I can understand, most people on the planet are yearning to really be met, to be seen, and to have a sacred relationship. There's a thirst and a hunger for this.
I think you're absolutely spot on. We're fed so much about all these so-called romantic relationships, but whenever we see these things on films or TV, it usually involves a kind of heartbreak, and it never ends well, does it? Whereas what we're talking about is, rather than a happy ending, we're talking about a happy beginning, a happy middle, and an even happier ending.
It's true, but the thing about it is that most of it's just complete projection.
Mm.
And so often when we enter a relationship, it comes from a place of projecting our conditioning with our parents onto another person and an ideal,
mm-hmm,
of wanting a person to meet and fit our expectation. And to unpeel that and to unfold and to peel away all of our different expectations or our actual primary conditioning, to be able to even be present enough to actually really see the person who's in front of us, it's a whole other story. So
absolutely.
My favorite subject ultimately is about the alchemical marriage within, because as far as I'm concerned, and I would love to possibly illustrate, you know, the qualities and the aspects of having a sacred connection with another person. But first and foremostly, I think it's about us coming to that place of union within ourselves.
Yeah. That's what they call the divine marriage, isn't it?
Exactly.
It's not the marriage that is, you're married to some divine person, which would be lovely, but that certain qualities within yourselves are balanced and in harmony, and not just balanced and in harmony, but actually working together. As opposed to living a life of internal antagonism, where one part of you feels this and the other part of you thinks that that's wrong and you're forever in conflict. We're talking about moving beyond all of that conflict, aren't we?
That's right, to move, transcend duality. And actually, I remember having this conversation with you so many years ago, to understand what we're talking about scientifically,
mm,
or on a level of quantum physics, with regards to understanding what is the golden mean and the Fibonacci sequence in relationship to this alchemical divine marriage that happens within. So what I always love to talk about is not, you know, what we're talking about today is not a theoretical thing. It's actually the actual, what's the word? It's the core basis of all the building blocks within all the different aspects through all the different solar systems. These are, you know, basic levels of quantum physics. This divine marriage is a marriage of matter and spirit.
Mm. So could you talk about that in terms of electrons and photons? Are we talking like the photons are like the feminine side and the electrons are the masculine side, or something like that? Is that what you're talking
I'm
about?
I'm probably not capable to talk about it, and that's probably you being able to quantify that. But I can talk about it in terms of in spirit and matter and the merging.
Mm-hmm.
And the Adam Kadmon, and how when we get to a certain stage of the wake up within our own being, when we've actually got to a place where we've become firstly conscious that we want to get outside of being self-absorbed, selfish, self-centered, when we're getting to a place where we're ready to, if you like, come on to a path of service, and how this creates our chakras, our centers of being, to vibrate at a different frequency and turn the wheel clockwise, so that we start to actually vibrate at, well, we're just actually just starting to radiate energy as opposed to absorb other people's light.
That, so we're moving from a point of this counterclockwise drawing in movement to a clockwise uncoiling, unwinding, and radiating outwards of our love energy coming from our heart centers, which are through the relationship opening up.
Exactly. So, you know, as far as I'm concerned, to actually have a healthy, beautiful connection with another person, we have to be in a level of alignment and connection with source or centering. So, you know, it's like we imagine that source is outside of ourselves, but actually it's a centering within ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
But it is an alignment with the central spiritual sun at the same time. But once we come into that alignment with central spiritual sun, a whole alchemical marriage begins, which I could go into in more depth if you think it's relevant. But would you like me to, before I talk about that, give...
Something's brushing against your microphone there.
Oh, sorry. I think I messed with my finger. Spot of dirt on my computer.
All right. It sounds like someone doing that on a rap single. Yeah.
It doesn't sound like it this end.
So what you're saying is basically in order to come into a divine tantric relationship, it's not about your how you're connecting with the other person. It's really how you're connecting with first.
It's so much about that, because actually you just used the word tantric. That's the first time we've used that today.
Yes.
There's so much misunderstanding about that word. In fact, I've realized being around a lot of people, you know, who have been connected to Osho and sannyasins, and I don't say that in a bad way, but I just realized there's two different descriptions of the word tantra. When I use the word tantra, I'm not talking about necessarily, please excuse the door.
Yeah.
Bye.
So, there's a certain emotional loading with the word tantra and tantric.
Well, I don't know if it's emotional loading, but it's just a different definition to what I understand as the word tantra. There is, you know, there's the left-hand path of tantra, which is about... I guess it's about self-satisfaction, and I don't know if it's about self-absorption, but it's very much focused on sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
And the white hand, or the white path of tantra, and the right path of tantra is an evolutionary going into... It's where all the centers in our bodies go up towards the central spiritual sun. And there's just this whole expansion of consciousness that comes from an awakening where it's just pure bliss, basically. And it's not, it's more to do with sensuality and our capacity to expand our consciousness telepathically, to come into a place of communion with the trees, the breeze, the clouds that are passing by, the animals, all the different essences of all the different flowers. That's a whole other level of communion that happens when we go into these exalted states of tantric union.
Mm-hmm.
And when that translates to being with a lover who there is no possession or attachment to, there's no desire for possession, that doesn't mean that we're not in a place of right relationship, and I'll come into more into discussion about that. But there's just a wanting for the best for that person's soul's evolution, and a recognition that that person is an aspect of ourselves and an aspect of deity, and that we're only looking to uplift and see the highest in the other.
I think, and that's really the real core of the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
To uplift not just yourself, which is what you're talking about with the left hand, the dark path, is that's uplifting yourself at the expense of somebody else.
Exactly.
But through honor and respect and recognition, you uplift not only yourself and your lover, but everybody that you touch. Is that right?
Yes. Yes, exactly. But then to have the courage to drop into the ultimate states of stillness and to really meet, like, you know, one of my contemplations in the last couple of years has been, because I paint, and I'll...
Oh, my God, audience, does Rita paint? Let me just tell you, she is a wonderful artist and designer. I mean, I've hardly described where you're at today, as to the complete multi-talentedness of yourself. But maybe we'll drop that in later. I don't want to embarrass you straight away, do I?
Thank you. But the main thing is that I've been painting this picture of Radha and Krishna, and it was an aspect where Radha's eyes were lowered, and she's sitting on this beautiful red luxurious sofa with Krishna in this love grove where all the lilies and all these amazing exotic smells, and it's just the most beautiful, exquisite depiction. And I've been meditating on this painting for quite a while, because it looks like her hand is lifted on in a gesture to push Krishna away, almost shying away from his radiance. And I was trying to understand why would it look as though Radha saying no to Krishna, the greatest lover of all beings? You know, he had 1,600 wives apparently, and actually recently, when my father died, and my father's Hindu, I had to organize a ceremony that was fitting for his culture, and part of it was to read the 15th chapter of the Gita, the Hindu. And what I found out about Krishna is that he is, like, understood in the Hindu tradition to be the actual fire of the universe, the fire of our digestion system, the fire of everything. And it helped me to understand further about intimacy, that actually, what is it that makes everybody in this mediocre state when people make love, or people, you know, like, what is it, you know, what is it that we're so scared of to sustain that really powerful, cosmic, blissful moment? Because in average humanity's lovemaking, an orgasm lasts very, very short. It's not a long-winded thing. And for a woman, it's very rare for a woman to have multidimensional orgasms. But not only that, it's very rare for a woman to, or for a man, to have an orgasm that penetrates every cell within their body, to open into another million cells of liquid light, which is the quality of the orgasmic nature that fills our bodies when we get to this stage of purity that I'm talking about in the highest levels of Tantra. And I speak about that from my own inner understanding as opposed to theory. I've experienced that level of expansion and liquid light, and where each cell opens into millions of cells of deep, deep bliss that feels unending. And then it's you know, then basic level of sexual interaction, not, it just doesn't cut the mustard, I think.
As it were.
However, the beautiful part is, on experiencing that, one then continues that extension of ourselves unendingly, because we can then have that melted, open, interactive quality with all the plants and the trees and the breeze and the devas and a child walking past, because the heart center is so open, and all of our etheric, you know, all of these hundred and, you know, or basically in the Tibetan system, for instance, 84,000 channels of our nadis are all awakened as these extensions of ourselves to touch and interact energetically with all things.
So essentially, when you're talking about tantric sexuality, it's not actually, the aim is not actually to get to the orgasm. The aim is to open up all of these channels.
Yes.
So that once the channels are open, then you become much more of a sensitive, sentient being, where you're able to, you know, you might walk along the street and you walk up on top of the root of a tree, and the chakras that have been opened in your feet will instantly go down, talk to the tree, you'll have an etheric conversation, as it were. And then as you walk past, you know, you're blessing the tree and the tree is blessing you. Is that what you're talking about?
That's a very good description of that, Jeremy. That is the case, yes. And that because we've come to that place of wholeness within ourselves, refinement, and this alchemical marriage has happened within ourselves, that we then can radiate the light of tranquility through our feet and become natural geomancers walking around the earth in a place of gratitude, with every breath as a prayer.
And when we're talking about that, in what I would call common New Age parlance, people would be talking about that is what we call grid work.
Yes.
As by activating ourselves, we activate the grid wherever we are.
Yes, that's the truth.
And
we're opening up the field, the Buddhaic field around us, because we're in the center of our own mandala within our own lives. And that's where all the energies of extraordinary creativity comes from. So, but let's talk about, because most people aren't at that stage, that's just giving a little taster of what we're longing for.
Right, that's the goal. Okay,
yeah.
So now let's talk about how to get there.
How to get there, this is the main thing. So first and foremostly, I would like to talk about it in the stages of initiation and wake up.
Great.
Okay, so if one can understand, and, you know, basically both Jeremy and I are students of ageless wisdom. And for myself, you know, I've got 20-odd years in this lifetime and many lifetimes where my practice has been about basically mastering, coming, and I'm not saying I'm a master in any way, shape or form, but it's about a practice towards becoming empty and purifying these channels of energy, which are the nadi system. And to understand from a yogic level how our chakras function.
Right. Okay. Can I just pause there?
Yes.
Can I just pause there? Because to those of us in the West who don't speak Sanskrit, there's a few words that we've introduced here, and I'd like to just go over them.
Sure.
One of them is chakra. Most people nowadays, particularly the sort of audience that we get here, we are up to speed with what chakras are and, you know, where they are in the body. But the ageless wisdom talks about how many chakras do we have, minor chakras?
Besides 21. 21 minor chakras and obviously 7 major.
Yeah.
And 1,000 points of light, which is our meridian system, which are all gates into interdimensional consciousness.
Okay. And nadis?
The Nadis are 84,000 channels.
And they connect the thousand
and
points of light?
They're like our etheric field that are only opened and activated through, and this is the point, through the accumulation of merit generated through our good deeds, words and actions, and through mantra and prayer and good intentions. That actually energizes and opens the nadis.
Right.
So if you're in this, say for instance, now this is really a good, important point.
Yeah.
Supposing you've had many lifetimes in the Patala, in under the umbrella of a lineage of Tibetan Buddhism, and have spent many lifetimes in caves and mountains and doing lots of practices, and then the Chinese comes along and invades Tibet, and you're dispersed and you've taken an incarnation, born in wherever, America, in Hungary, wherever, and that you're born to a family, because remember that within Tibetan Buddhism that the bodhisattva vow is to continue to take incarnation and to basically serve the purpose to uplift the bloodline that we're born into. So imagine you've taken an incarnation wherever in the world, and you've got parents who do not understand that you're a deity or that you're a high-level being, and you're beaten as a child, and you've had all sorts of dysfunctional activities within your homeland, and you've got all this merit within your energy field and in your chakras stored. And how, if you've been beaten and put down and, you know, imprinted with all this negative conditioning, which is what most of humanity gets given, how to then come off of the wheel of being in an emotional reaction and a survival mode. So actually, we started off talking about, I was wanting to explain about the different stages of initiation, and it's true, I talked a little bit about the nadis and the chakras and what, and I've gone off the subject again, now please excuse me. So which one should I go back to? Shall I think?
Well, it's a good little aside to say that many people in the West, particularly those who are seekers, are unknowing to themselves and definitely to the rest of their family that they are actually not from the same country. They are a part of an emergency plan to incarnate all of the dead souls who were killed in the times when China invaded Tibet.
Yeah.
Basically, that there were vast numbers of students who were slaughtered by the Chinese. But of course, like Obi-Wan Kenobi, if you kill them, they become much stronger. So what they then decided to do was to incarnate into America and Europe, large numbers of Europe Americans. And I believe that that's what people call the Indigo Children. That the Indigo Children are the secondary souls who have incarnated all over the place, and like you say, they're here to deal with the karma of the family bloodlines that they've incarnated into. And interestingly enough, I spoke to the great granddaughter of General Eisenhower last week, who is absolutely there. I'll connect you with some of her stuff. You'd be fascinating.
Yeah, I would. That is very fascinating. You know, that's just reminding me of this extraordinary dream I had about the six root-raised children that are highly telepathic when you talk about the Indigo Children.
Mm.
We'll come back to that later.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow, Jeremy, it's so nice to talk to you. We could talk for hours.
Yeah, we could ramble on. Let's stay focused. So,
okay.
So we were talking about nadis and chakras and the initiations that you go through. Now, you and I are familiar with this, but we need to move. First of all, we need to define, what is an initiation, Rita?
Okay, well, initiation is certainly not something that anyone can do to you, first and foremostly. Let's just dispel that.
Mm-hmm.
No one can initiate you. No one can balance your chakras, these great centers of force that you bring through in each and every lifetime, which is are an accumulation of all that you are.
Mm.
So just get a quick run through the chakras. These chakras, or these centers of force that make up your being, store within each center the accumulation of what you've attained through all that you've been before. And these are, if they were seen etherically, they're like geometric circular discs, which in most of humanity are fairly dormant, or if not spinning in an anti-clockwise direction, pulling energy and sucking light towards them, because most people are in a place of neediness,
mm-hmm.
and self-absorption, and not in that place of inner completion that I've been talking about, this divine inner marriage.
Mm.
So it's only when we come onto the path, when we suddenly become aware of this voice within ourselves, this is the beginnings of the first initiation, when we become aware that this little voice of our conscience is saying, which is basically our souls, just starting to, or rather our personality is saying, I can't bear being so bloody selfish and negative. I really need to transcend this. And we become quiet and we start to go through what might be the first stage of the dark night of the soul. And when I talk about the word soul, because so many people just have a vague understanding about that.
Yeah, let's define the fact that we speak of the soul as a very specific scientific reality.
It is, and there is a science of the soul. And so my definition of the soul, it's not my personal definition, but my understanding, in brief, without it being a whole book, is that the soul is an electronic accumulation that's all this information stored in a geometric pattern, each one very unique because we all have accumulated merit in different ways. So every good deed, word and action that we've ever uttered, taken or intended throughout each of our different lifetimes becomes stored as a geometric pattern. And that energy is brought forward in each lifetime. So the purpose of our lifetime is whether we could, as an ego, as a personality that's developing, surrender and build a bridge to the light of our soul to be able to manifest itself as its exquisite, gentle and serene beauty that it is.
Right.
That's different to the spirit of who we are. So we have a soul and we have a spirit. And our ultimate aim is to build a bridge, the Antakarana or the rainbow bridge, to the light of the spirit that we are, which is the fragment of ourselves, which is deity, which is never, which could never be extinguished. And which is the fire of who we are that's so brilliant and so radiant and so ultimately in union with all existence. And I really love Marianne Williamson's speech that she wrote for Nelson Mandela, or who they spoke about, which is, you know, that our greatest fear is the light of who we are ultimately. And that this is the point of Tantra, coming back to that very, you know, to just for one split second to be really meeting another person, to really be able to hold the gaze and look at another person, to really be present to their essence, to the light of who they are, takes our ability to be present for ourselves and to know our own divinity. So it's only when we really honestly can meet our own divinity and to know our own beauty and to know the goodness of all that we are and to honor that, can we begin the work. The work being to then, as a bodhisattva, to uplift and transform and to transmute the bloodline that we've been born in, Because up until now, humanity has not been awakened.
Mm-hmm.
Up until now, so far on this planet, that we're only coming to the stage of initiation where only a few will take the initiation, the third initiation in this lifetime that we're in, of, and the third initiation, which I'll go into more depth, is this divine alchemical marriage, where the result of that is to be still enough to be in the present, like a person who is so eloquent in how he describes all of that is, he wrote The Power of Now.
Eckhart Tolle.
Yes, Eckhart. He's a sweet, beautiful man. I've had dinner with him, and he really does radiate that presence, and he really writes about stillness in that way. But to have opened our brow center, basically third initiation is when the light of our spirit and all that we are can travel, that fire and that power and that energy can travel unimpeded down to the base of the spine, uncoil the sleeping serpent so that it can rise up through all of our centers as pure kundalini, because we've done the purification that it takes to take that amount of force to come up to the brow center and to liberate us from living in the matrix of doom and gloom and negativity, and to be able to witness the good, the true, and the beautiful. This is what it is to have gone through the third initiation. It's just like an arising and a just coming home.
Mm-hmm.
It's not an unnatural place, and it's not a place of feeling self-important or superior. It's just a place of normality, of just being at home in the heart and knowing that there's nowhere else to go apart from being totally authentic and to only have one true design, that's to uplift all beings, all sentient beings, wherever and however, and to live as a prayer of gratitude.
Beautifully put, Rita.
Thank you.
Now, again, a lot of the audience of this show and of many shows on the internet, they talk about fifth dimensionality and what's the other? They have various other buzzwords. Ascension. Now,
yeah.
When you're talking about third initiation, that's the same thing as talking about ascension.
I'd love to put it in perspective of fifth dimensionality, because actually I often used to use that word. Okay. There is a state of consciousness where when we enter that zone of absolute stillness in the third initiation, our brain waves go from alpha, where we're inspired, into theta and then gamma. And it's when we go from theta into gamma brainwaves, from having done a lot of meditation, a lot of practices, a lot of mantra in previous lifetimes, and that we're able to enter what's called stillness, the Taoists would call the very Tao. It's just pure emptiness. And from that place, then for me, how I experience it is, I go into total emptiness. It feels like I've just gone off to sleep. And then suddenly I'm back in my body, but a gate has opened in my brow center and I'm experiencing things in fifth dimensional consciousness. And often get to see things etherically, but it's not at will in the same way as lower psychism. Mm. Because most lower psychics would take the energy from their brow center down into their solar plex and send out a scanning energy that invades and scans in to try and draw information, but it's only from the astral plane.
Mm-hmm.
And then they get information on that level. But in this state of fifth dimensional consciousness, it's a telepathic state of oneness where we're accessing just the energies from the heart and the brow and emptiness. There's no mind, actually. That's the point.
Yeah. And but the thing is, it's all about a state of normalness.
Yes.
In a way, isn't it? It's like the more high you get, the more normal everything seems to be. Even if it's like quite extraordinary what's going on, it just feels normal.
Yeah.
It's just a new normal, as some people say. So we're talking about the same process that is going on globally. It's not like there's another process where people's third initiations are going on. We're talking about the same thing that's going on, but other people call it ascension. But according to these wisdoms, they're just like numbers. It's just like stripping it down out of any glamour or specialness to a point when, you know, it's just 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. That's the level it is. No one's better than the other. It's just, yeah, this is the progression. And it's like saying, because I'm going to Glasgow, it's much more important that I get to Liverpool than it is that I get to Manchester as I drive from London. You know, it's like, that's stupid, isn't it? That would be completely, that's really important, I get to Manchester. But, wow, yes, Liverpool, I'm really looking forward to Liverpool.
It's true to say that there's no place of arrival. And the beauty of it is, it's just dealing with the moment and what is. And I really, really seeing that, because, you know, can you invite me back on so we can talk about things like 2012 and people's fear around different prophecies? But
sure, because I'd love to talk about, I'd love to have you on, even if you want to as a regular. You know, I mean, every couple of months you come in and report what's going on.
As well, on that level, you know, and people could phone in with their birth details.
Uh-huh.
But, because I really would love to assist on a practical level tonight, do with relationships and how to, for instance, for women to have the courage to create the space to have a sacred interaction with another man.
Mm.
It's, you know, it takes so much courage to be able to do that. And I'd like to talk about where people trip up in terms of sacred relationships and how things drop into familiarity and complacency and resentment and doom and gloom and our conditioning projected onto another and ruts.
Yes.
You know, like they're the
like what happened to almost every relationship.
With you, Jeremy, it's so easy for me to go into the cosmic interdimensional because that is my reality.
Mm.
And at the same time, I have been through having relationships with drug addicts. I've got 4 children aged from 28 to 8 years old.
28? No way.
And he's 28 now.
Oh, bless his heart.
Amazing. And just so many things that, you know, I really understand the pain of desperately longing for to be met in the most sacred and beautiful relationship.
Mm.
And how much we've compromised ourselves and settling for certain things and how, you know, and what it could take to liberate ourselves and how to improve the relationship we're in.
I think that might be a good place to start, eh?
So that's it. That's a good point.
Yes. So if there are any people who would like to speak with Rita about this, if in fact there's anybody who wants to keep going, because this show will, although it will close at midnight GMT, it will carry on for another hour if we want, and that will be available on the archive and people pick it up tomorrow. So we can have we'll hear this kind of, 9 minutes left, 1 minute left, all that stuff. But we can carry on for as long as we like, really, as long as we need to deal with any situations and as long as you have any time. So, yes, if anybody's wishing to call in at that moment.
If you call in, call me from the perspective as well. I'm an esoteric astrologer. One of the things that I love to do is to understand your birth details, which gives me an insight into the tools that you've incarnated within this lifetime in relationship to the transits of where you are now. It's very interesting to see who we attract into our lives to learn through.
Right.
In a relationship.
Definitely. Chris, are you still there? I can see that you're online. And, you know, he's a lovely friend of mine. from London, and so if he's interested, he would wanted me to bring him into the conversation.
Okay.
So I'll see if he's there. I'm just going to activate that. Activate that. We'll see if Christopher's there. If not, we can keep going because there's no answer, no reply. Okay, but that's fine. So what we'll do is we'll because we've got so much to talk about. Let's continue on the path of dealing with the relationship that you have.
Yeah.
Not dealing with it, but how to reverse any of the problems. Yeah.
Okay. Would you like me to say something about it?
Absolutely.
Okay.
You're the guest.
Okay. Well. Okay. Where should I start? Well, one of the things that I've been contemplating is how important it is for us to, if we want a high quality of relationship, it's essential to begin by meditating with our beloved and actually spending time meditating on our own. Because in meditation, I'm sorry if I'm being very basic on this, and I kind of have this assumption that all the listeners would obviously be making that time to make their connection with themselves and stop for a moment in their day to just have time to listen to our own inner voice and to make our connection with creation, with existence, to all that is. Because if we want a high quality of relationship, we have to nourish ourselves, to draw from the source itself. Because Tantra is about having really a diamond connection with source and then bringing that quality of alignment to our partner to share from that fountain. And to be in such a place of purity, openness and transparency. And I really think I need to expand on the word openness, so that we can actually merge atomically with each other. That's what Tantra is that we're so translucent that we can actually literally pass through each other as beings. Because, and that's also to do with a very high level state of telepathy.
So it's like almost becoming two ghosts who then stand in the same place.
Well, I don't know about ghosts, because ghosts, well, to me, is not like animated soul.
Oh, but I mean, of that sort of density.
I do know what you mean. You mean the translucency of just two beings that can merge together.
As if your atoms have all kind of come apart slightly so that you can,
Yeah, that's the openness, isn't it?
So that's what you're talking. So there's a sense of contraction as well that implies that we are contracted. Interesting that word. We're contracted.
I like the word contracted, but I don't, because I always think of expansion, contraction. Well, Tantra is about expansion.
Yes, but in our normal space, here we are. We're contracted into being, you know, solid and physical, apparently.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And so when you're talking about expanded, you're like one of those diagrams in the Haynes manual where you see the engine and you see all the parts fly, you know, sort of in different places, so you can see how it's constructed. So even if that just comes apart, even if we were to atomize just a little bit, we would be able to, say, walk through a wall or something like that.
Exactly.
So the idea is then you become each other. You share exactly the same space.
Yeah, exactly.
And that must, I mean,
put it.
That would be a very, very nourishing place, I would imagine.
Yeah, but imagine that most people are trying to keep secrets from each other and close each other out.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people don't sit directly facing each other.
No, because of trust.
And it's about trust. So to me, that's a really important point. My first processes with understanding Tantra, as I awoken to this training that I'd had from previous lives, was recognizing Tantra to me equals trust. Well, Tibetans say that Tantra is all about space, ultimately, which I agree with. And they also say it's the thread. It's about the thread moving between things, which I also agree with. But actually, for me, Tantra, more than anything else, is trust. So I love that you recognize that. It is. It's the trust to have another person walk right through you.
Absolutely.
Have merge with you. And the most beautiful thing, and it's interesting, we haven't gone into these cosmic conversations. Jeremy is one of the few people that I've met in his lifetime that spontaneously goes into kriyas and mudras, which I also do. And I haven't sat with you for quite a few years in this way.
No.
But for me, when I'm in a total place of tantric union with another person, that they go into these symmetrical mudras also. That the being in the stillness of the Tao moves the body into these geometric curves that express through the hands and the body in this way of just being complete meeting.
And just to cover a few of those terms, you know, kriya and mudra. Kriya is like jolts of energy that move through your being. I mean, it's not just through your body. It's like all the fields surrounding you, as it were. Mudra is the expression through movements of the hands and arms of these particular tantric and, well, not just tantric, but key energy. And you will see mudra in paintings of Buddhas, which are called tankas, T-H-A-N-K-A. more of these Sanskrit words. But anyway, you see them in Tibetan temples and things like that. And you've got a little curtain. It's almost like a little theater in rendered in 2D. And they're painted onto silk, and they're absolutely beautiful, painted in a meditation. And you will see the hands being placed, and sometimes you'll see a Buddha that's got 1,000 arms, you know, and you're thinking, yeah, that's not very practical, you know, particularly if it's, you know, if it's a hot country, you know.
Actually, can I tell you what the 1,000 arms represent, Jeremy?
Well, I was just about to say that those are different movements. It's like a flick book, isn't it?
No, it's not just that. It's yes, that, but it's more to the point is, it's actually symbolizing the 1,000 attainments of Avalokiteshvara. So say, for instance, you saw a deity with 6 arms, and one might be holding a conch shell, another one some books to show their studies, and another might be a skull with its head cut off and blood coming out of it, showing that they've attained the nectar of immortality. And you know, basically the different arms symbolize the different skills that they've attained. So the 1,000 arms with 1,000 different expressions of all the different attainments.
Ah, what a lovely way of putting it. I've not heard that before, and that totally makes sense to me.
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, when you say you've got a handle on something.
I love that. Sorry for laughing.
It's all right. I'll repair the equipment next week, don't I? But yeah, I mean, yeah. To you know, you hand something to somebody. There's all these expressions that involve the hand, and it's about literally gaining the skill of the hand.
Yeah.
The hand. You and I are particularly keenly aware that the hand is not just this thing that's got an opposed thumb. It is a it's the ultimate tool. It's the ultimate technology, if you want to use some of the parlance that we're also talking about on the web at the moment. We talk about technologies, people are very, very unaware that their hands are so special. Can we talk about the hands just for a little bit?
Yeah.
And the energies of the fingertips and stuff.
Yeah. Because actually, hands and relationships are really important.
Absolutely.
You know, okay, I'm going to just talk a little bit about the hand, but then I'd like to talk about the hand, how we can use our hands to nourish another.
Mm. Yes, I'd like your daughter's hand in marriage. See?
Oh, yeah, I like that. Yeah, but I haven't even thought of that one.
Yeah.
I'm more thinking about the fact that each fingertip, this is a good exercise. Okay, anyone listening into this show has a lover or a good friend that they would like to experiment with, I would love to offer you the invitation to sit upright, take a few deep breaths through the nose, and to connect with another person, and to basically one person take the other person's hand and to hold that hand for a few seconds and to just connect with their whole energy through the hand, and then just with our forefinger to direct all of our consciousness and energy through that one forefinger. And even if you're on your own, you can do it to yourself, this experiment, where you direct your energy through one fingertip into the forefinger of another fingertip. So it's either to another person or to yourself. Jeremy, can you just do this now?
Okay. So here I am. I'm sitting in my chair.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at my hand, the palm upwards. So what am I doing?
Okay. So you're taking your forefinger of your left hand.
When you say my forefinger, do you mean my index finger or the middle finger?
Okay, index.
Index, okay.
Yeah, okay.
Right?
Then can you direct the energy from that finger into the fingertip of your other index finger, your left hand to the right hand?
All right, do I touch them together?
No, you just have a little gap of about, say, 4 centimetres. No, sorry, not 4 centimetres, about 1 centimetre.
All right.
Can you feel that?
Well, I can feel the pulsing and tingling of the blood moving through my fingertip on my left hand. Yes, and I feel a very slight pulsing, yeah. It's a different pulsing. It's like a much lower frequency that is on that I'm feeling with my right hand. Should I try it the other way around?
Yeah, try it the other way around, actually. Okay. Yeah, good idea, because you're right, because males probably have more end coming.
And you're left-handed, aren't you?
I'm left-handed, and
yes, that's right.
So
try it the other way around, because, so, we're zooming up on there. I can definitely feel more of a field.
So the point, what I would like to demonstrate here is that just by a beginning of a connection through the power of the energy that we transmit through our fingertips and actually bringing that light and that energy to another. Okay. Or just even if we were with another person now, where we can, with our thumb and our index finger, just holding another fingertip and then just holding that and traveling through the person, we would be amazed. Everyone would be amazed of how much you can actually, information, you know, that's how cranial sacral in a way works. Not that I've ever trained in it, but it's just the ability to have the sensuality, the sensitivity to. Okay, do I just ignore that?
Yeah, we've got 90 seconds. So we're going to be wrapping up in a second from the broadcast. If anybody wants to join us, let us know. I think I'll see if Chris is wanting to come back in on this.
Okay.
But the wrap up here. Yeah.
Okay, so what I want... Oh, Chris is busy. Okay. So the main thing that I would like to say is that the extraordinary ability through our hands to actually nourish another person, I think that's the beginning.
That does sound like the best place to start. Rita Jerez, I have so enjoyed this. This is just absolutely not enough. I want much more of Scrumptious Rita Jerez.
Oh, thank you.
All the way from the heart chakra. We got to do this more often. If you're up to it, we could do it any month, every month.
Okay. Yeah, let's do once a month. I'm up for it.
Yeah. Okay. We'll work out a cycle, and we'll be joined later on by Rita Jerez. Thank you very much, Rita. And is there anything else? We've got probably about less than a minute, but I'll let you have the last words here. 10 seconds.
Just please be kind to those that you love. Hold them in the highest light. That's my words of wisdom for this month.
Brilliant. Perfect. Thank you. And that will be the show. Wonderful. That's absolutely wonderful. So it's still recording, so we can continue with this, or maybe we should complete this show, let people download it, and
let's complete it so I can have a little rap with you.
Yeah, cool. Okay. Rita Fraze, thank you, and good night.
Thank you. Good night.
Oops.
There we go. So should we just quickly speak on